A white man? No!
Hello and welcome to the Unsub as a White Man. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Emily.
And we're back with another Criminal Minds recap for, I'm going to go ahead and say, one of the most perfect episodes we've watched so far.
It is a great one.
It's really good. And it's back to real Criminal Minds, like no gimmick, no nonsense, just what we showed up for.
Yeah, and a really engaging unsubbed too.
Yes.
Not just like one who comes out of nowhere at the end and you're just like, what?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's so good. And as is my like routine these days, my first note is, do I remember this? And my second note is, oh my God, I remember this.
Yes.
Which I seem to do with every single episode. But I didn't, we'll obviously get there. I'm not going to give anything away, but I didn't add an unsub to my statistics chart because I wasn't sure how to technically record it. And I think you know what I mean. And we'll talk about it, but
yeah, we'll get to it.
Shall we dive right in?
We should.
Of course, talking about The Perfect Storm, which originally aired October 4th, 2006.
Yes. So this one starts out and there's a couple in Florida. It's like a trailer park, I think.
Yeah. Kind
of. They get a DVD and in the mail, and it's from their daughter who's on vacation. And they're like, oh, cool, let's see what she sent us. And they put it in. And it's this horrific video of their daughter being assaulted to Only the Good Die Young.
It is horrifying.
Yeah.
This whole premise is completely terrifying. It ruins the song for you.
Yes.
I was raised on Billy Joel. I love Billy Joel.
I assume it's especially bad for you.
Yeah.
As a big Billy Joel fan.
I can never listen to that song until I forget about this episode again.
Yeah.
And it's like the mom and dad are so cute. They're like, oh, we thought it'd just be pictures. And the dad's like, oh, technology is passing us by. Of course, these young kids are sending this. And then it's that.
Yeah. And they're so excited to get this package from their daughter because they want to see what she's been up to. And like it's just absolutely horrific. Yeah.
It's a lot to take in the first few minutes, and it's just going to get worse.
Yeah, and like just from the get-go, you're like, I'm totally in. This episode's good already. So the team is watching the video at the BAU, and JJ says that the father had a heart condition, and he died while watching the tape
because he couldn't take it. This poor dad, I know. Jesus Christ, Criminal Minds. And we're like 3.5 minutes into this episode, including the opening credits.
Page 2 of the script.
Yeah. It's a lot to take in. What I also really liked about this is that Elle's hair is so terrible. It looks like she's wearing a really bad wig. Did you notice?
Yeah, it's real bad.
It looks like a community theater wig that like somebody just took out of the packaging and put on her head and nobody washed or styled it.
Yeah.
Oh. Chef's kiss.
Yeah. It's bad. So we learned that the victim is a 20-year-old college student, and this is the 5th in a series of similar attacks. The girl was never reported missing because no one really knew where she was. The roommate thought that she was visiting her family, and the family thought that she was at school. So Morgan says that the other victims were kept for weeks for being murdered, so she's probably still alive. And Elle's like, not for long. You're like, shut up, haircut.
Yeah, seriously. Super helpful.
Yeah. Just being a real Debbie Downer.
Mm-hmm.
Reed says that the attacks are escalating and the DVDs add a psychological attack on the families. Hotch says that the thrill of the kill must no longer be enough to satisfy the killer. And Gideon says that there has to be more than one unsub because they can tell by the way the camera is moving that somebody's holding it. It's not just...
Yeah, and the way that they're, like, gesturing at the camera.
Yeah.
Like, moving her body towards the camera and stuff.
Yeah, it's obviously like they're being
instructions.
Yeah, directed. So then we get our first quote from Gideon. He says, Mark Twain wrote, of all the animals, man is the only one that is cruel. All right.
Apropos.
Yes. On the plane, the team discusses the phenomenon of folie à deux, I think is how you say it.
Mm. It seems right to me.
I'm real sick of the French in this. Yeah. I gotta say. Elle says that the killing teams always have a dominant and a submissive person. And Gideon adds that the video is both a souvenir and an insurance policy in case one of the members of the team gets cold feet.
Though I really, it's only an insurance policy on the one that's on camera.
Yeah.
It doesn't incriminate the person doing the recording.
No, it doesn't.
Whatever. Yeah. They're also just like watching this brutal video on a loop on the plane.
Yeah.
It's real grim.
I don't get it. I don't know how you could do that.
Yeah, I don't either.
But yeah, like the folie à deux thing, like that's like a shared delusion between two people. And that
Which
doesn't
seems
seem to
like
be
a huge jump that like, I don't know. I don't want to minimize it. Like these kinds of crimes happen. What makes you feel like all the time, right?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's like a delusion happening. It just seems like it's more a shared like sadism.
Yeah.
Than anything else. But okay.
They like to go there.
Yeah. Garcia says that the Jacksonville Police Department has found Laura Clemenson's body, who is the girl.
That was quick, yeah.
Yeah. Reed says that the killer's timeline has sped up.
Which, shocking, the BAU is involved, and suddenly the killer's timeline is escalating.
Yes, as
it
does.
That doesn't happen every time.
No. So Hotch and Elle go to talk to the mother. She's having a real rough time of it.
Yeah. Oh, this poor woman. Yeah.
She asks about the pearl and diamond ring that her husband gave to their daughter. She just wants to have that back if she could. And they're like, we'll look into it. But nobody found it.
Right. I thought this mom did a great job, too. Her as like a victim's family member reaction was one of the best ones they've had in a while, I thought.
Yeah.
She was just very raw and real.
Don't know. Very believable. I liked her a lot.
Yeah.
So Hotch asks about Laura's personality. She says that Laura was confident and friendly and really close to her family. Hotch says that the last time Laura was seen was when she was giving directions to a stranger. And he's like, is that something that your daughter would do? Like, yeah, most people would if they asked for directions.
I mean, not us because we've watched too much Criminal Minds, but...
Also, nobody asks me for directions if they know me.
Yeah, same. Me too. I have zero sense of direction.
Yeah. When I was in Boston a couple weeks ago, this random person, like, stopped me and asked for directions. Yeah. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I've been here for a day and a half. But then I was like, do I look like a local?
Yeah, doesn't this always, makes you feel really confident? But it's like, wow, like, I'm blending in.
I know. I look like I belong here.
City girl.
It's because I was holding a cup of Dunkin' Donuts coffee.
And not staring at a map. Yeah. When I lived in New York, I would come up out of the subway and walk in the opposite direction that I needed to go because I have zero sense of direction. And they even, I mean, the names of the streets are like written in the stairwells and I would still go the wrong way. So... No, my real fear should just be getting lost in general, not being abducted while getting directions.
But the mom is just like absolutely horrified that raising her kids to be helpful and kind seemed to have made her an easy target. And you're like, way to go, Hotch, you're making it worse.
Of course, the BAU has no bedside manner.
Not any at all. I mean, it's Hotch and Elle.
Right. The two worst people to interview somebody.
Yeah. Elle's really hit or miss, mostly miss.
Yeah, especially now that she's all like PTSD.
Yeah.
Just a useless lump.
Yeah. Gideon and Morgan go to the crime scene. They find Laura's, like, her body's bound in plastic wrap.
God,
and there's
this, like, saran wrap diaper kind of situation.
Yeah,
like,
it's awful.
She's in this reclined butterfly pose that's just... ruined yoga for me forever.
Yeah.
It's so gross.
Yeah. And there's no ring on her body. And they suspect that the killer took it to pass along as a gift, which I guess the Green River Killer did, but or keep it as a souvenir. Like, why would you think they were necessarily passing it along?
The videos were the souvenir, but I mean, the way that recording those worked at that time in the early 2000s, they wouldn't necessarily have another copy of that DVD.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they would say that the jewelry couldn't be a souvenir because they have the DVDs. We don't know that they necessarily do.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows?
They're always reaching for something. What I loved about this was seeing Mandy Patinkin just totally like verklempt in the Florida heat, like dabbing his face in the cloth. And there's a shot of him from behind where you can see the sweat through his shirt. Like, he's just, it was a hot day that day. They really wanted it to seem like Florida, and he was sweating it out.
Yes, extremely sweaty. So Reed has found some more potential victims.
In his great glasses.
Yes.
Loving these glasses.
Yeah.
I want a pair now.
Yeah. And they've like finally figured out what to do with his hair. So yeah. It's not just slicked back and greasy.
All of a sudden looks really good in this episode.
Yeah. Maybe they just got a new hair and makeup person who liked him more.
Maybe.
So JJ also realizes that the DVDs were sent only to the mothers. They were only addressed to the moms, not the dads. Reed surmises that the parents' pleas for their daughters,
on the news.
Yeah. Press conferences?
Yeah, is that what they're called? Yes.
May have angered the killers, and that sending the DVDs is a message that they don't want or need forgiveness. Okay.
It's as always, they're just reaching for things out of thin air. Yeah.
So there is a blonde girl, and she is running in what appears to just be a nice suburban neighborhood, mm-hmm. broad daylight.
The house is close to the street.
Yeah, they're at a four-way intersection. There's houses on every corner.
Yeah.
and a van stops, asks for directions, and he grabs her as she's putting her earbud back in, and she screams, and it's like, this is not discreet even a little bit.
It is so sloppy and conspicuous. That's what I wrote down. It's like, if this is how they've been grabbing women, how have they not been noticed?
Yeah.
It's like the street in front of my house. Like, somebody is going to hear a car idling outside and glance out their window or something.
Yeah. Like, somebody's going to be mowing their lawn. Somebody's going to be walking their dog
watering
in a neighborhood
their plants
like that.
Or grabbing their mail or something.
Yeah.
And they would notice that.
Yeah.
They're not slick.
So the team is wondering why the killers go through so much trouble to hide the cars that they use in these abductions when the bodies are dumped so carelessly.
Because they don't want to be caught would be my response.
They
hide the cars so they don't get caught.
I don't think that's it. There must be another motivation.
Doesn't add up.
Yeah. And then I wrote, Gideon is super mad about the heat. Yes,
I wrote, Gideon isn't made for this Florida heat.
He is not. He is just a cool weather man. Then we get the profile.
And, oh my God, I almost missed it because it's been so long.
I know, we haven't gotten
profile. It has been weeks. So it started and I had to rewind it when I realized what was happening. So, as the BAU says, the dominant one is the mastermind. That's not to say that the submissive partner is in any way pure or innocent in this exchange. If their criminal desire wasn't present, this partnership wouldn't work. The offenders share a common delusion, one that you and I would never accept, but it's a bond that defines their actions. It's kind of like the perfect storm.
Mm. What's the name of the episode?
And it was Reed that says it. We should be keeping track of who
How
says the name.
How often Reed
yeah,
says the
it
name?
Seems like
it's usually
Reed
him.
A lot. Yeah. Once these deviant personalities come together, they're deadly and unstoppable. Like the DC snipers or the Columbine assassins. Sometimes they've met in childhood. Other times they could be related, like the Hillside Stranglers. And there's a great
There's just so many PowerPoint. Name drops
yeah.
here.
There's a PowerPoint in presentation, all the images, giant faces of all of these killers behind them. The dominant partner makes the submissive one feel invincible. That's his reward for doing as he's told. Unfortunately, there are countless opportunities for these twisted minds to meet, and once they've pulled off their vicious acts, they come to view their behavior as normal activity and they're bored with their regular lives. They live only for their new reality. They're obsessed and addicted. There's a fierce loyalty between the two. The submissive one is usually less intelligent and easier to catch, and once he's caught, it's easier to turn. Lack of remorse increases their aggressiveness. Sexual sadists only stop once they're caught, and the need to torture the families will never know because JJ has to interrupt this profile to give us some urgent news.
Yes.
Seriously, you can't let them finish a sentence.
No. There is also a really bad childhood bully reenactment.
Yeah.
In that.
Mm-hmm. And when they talk about all the different places that dominance and submissives can meet. It's like people at a stand-up table at a bar. There's like a neon cocktails light behind them. Like,
yeah. I mean, is this that where you meet all of your partners in crime?
Just amble on up to them at the bar.
They wouldn't be at a booth. They would only be at a stand-up table.
No, a dominant would only be at a stand-up table.
That's true.
Think a submissive would be submissive. But then how would they find each other?
Oh my God.
They're seated in different sections of the restaurant.
It makes no sense. I'm going to need more information. Yes, yeah, so the team learns about a new victim because the mother's holding a press conference. It's like, how? Okay, whatever.
Escalated quickly, like always.
And she's, you know, obviously asking for them to return her daughter safely and everything. Yeah. And Garcia is just watching that videotape again. Like, this woman is never going to be able to listen to Billy Joel ever again.
No. Like, that's a great song, too.
Yeah.
Gonna get all the Billy Joel hate in this episode.
Yeah. There's just no way that Garcia gets paid enough. They always make her. They're like, just isolate the audio in this video so you have to listen to this woman scream for 9 hours during your work day.
Yeah, just watch her be tortured.
Yeah. Like, poor, poor Garcia. but she has also found that the parts from the cars were sold at an auto shop in Georgia. They're like, forgot about the car thing.
Yeah. Anyone going to follow up on that?
Yeah. They do. The sales were tied to a Joey Davin. So they go to talk to him and everyone is very sweaty. It's just gross. Like, everyone in this scene is so, so sweaty.
Yep.
Also see they're talking to the victim's mom. Like, she looks like she's like 40 years old, but the daughter looked like she was 30. And
yeah.
It's like, how old is this girl supposed to be?
It was a very strange age discrepancy.
Yeah.
But I felt so bad for this mom, like the guilt.
Yeah.
She was supposed to go on the run with her, but she didn't go.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I'm so glad I don't go running anywhere. I thought of you. Like, I hope you run fast because this is why I don't. I run too slow and I would definitely be abducted.
That's why I don't give people directions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the police show up at Joey Davin's house and Joey's watching the news. Joey's dad, who's in a wheelchair, lets them in. And then Joey comes out with a gun and he's like, I won't go back to prison. And then they just shoot him in the chest.
A ton of times.
A lot of times.
It's
right in front of his dad.
Holy shit. I know he raised a gun at them. Okay. But three shots in front of his disabled father seems like excessive force to me.
Just in the chest?
Yeah. Like, shoot him in the arm or in the foot or something.
Yeah.
There seems to be lots of ways.
Yeah, try to talk him down even.
Yeah.
You could do that.
I mean, doesn't Hotch pride himself on being able to talk people down and it not like getting to that point?
But I think maybe he just like drones on at them for so long that they get bored and give in.
I mean, I would. But what was that episode? I can't remember which one it was now where he like goes in to talk to the guy and they're like, don't do it. It's not safe.
Was it the bomber one?
Yeah, maybe.
I think it was the bomber one.
It doesn't even matter.
Because he, like, talks to him and the bomber guy's like, okay, sure, fine. It just gives up immediately.
Please stop talking. Yeah. Fine, I'll go with you. But, yeah, it was just, like, all of a sudden. And it wasn't one of the BAU guys that did the shooting. So
no,
I guess this guy's a wild card, this local guy. But, man, it's, like,
it just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really weird scene. And everybody's just kind of bad at acting.
And well, like, there's no urgency about it after it happens.
No, they're like,
all
well,
the tension dissipates immediately.
Guess, yeah, they're like, I guess we shot this man in front of his father. So can we check out his room?
Yeah,
would
the
that
dad
be okay?
Is really calm answering all of these questions after watching them gun down his son.
Yeah.
And he's just like, man, I can't believe this would happen.
Yeah. So they find this long blonde hair in Joey's room. And Joey's dad says that he hangs out with a lot of ex-cons at the garage where he works. And Gideon calls Garcia to ask about Joey's cellmate. And his name was Tony Canardo. And Garcia has an address. So Gideon is like, Garcia, you do really great work. Keep it up.
I'm like, oh, aww. You can tell she needed that today. It's been a rough one.
But yeah, Garcia's really surprised by this, but it's probably because she's still like, I'm sure she's still reeling a little bit from like the last interaction with Gideon when he was super pissed at her for playing that video game
He's
and getting
emotional
the whole system.
Roller coaster.
Yeah, he would be a really bad boss.
Yeah.
So at the garage, the owner says that Joey Davin had just been fired last week.
And Elle's like, oh, you didn't waste any time replacing him. I'm like, what? This is his job. What are they supposed to do? Mourn for him after they fire him?
It's not like his ex-boyfriend. Yeah, it's not like he has to be like, you know what? I just want to see what my life is like as like a sole proprietor of this business.
Like, why would they wait to hire a replacement, Elle?
Yeah.
This man has a business to run. He just said he was bad at his job.
Yeah.
He hired someone better. I don't understand.
You know how it is. When,
and she's
like
so surly about it too.
Like, it was really
weird.
There's
no personal relationship here.
They didn't break up.
Right. Like, that he just worked there.
Yeah.
Like, you're replaceable too. They would replace you immediately as well.
As they do later.
As I've been looking forward to for a season and a half.
Yeah. She's gone for like 12 minutes before they're like, here's your replacement. Yeah. We already had her on standby.
Like, oh my God. It was just such a weird interaction.
Yeah. Everybody in the scene is also really sweaty.
Yes.
And he recognizes the picture of Tony Cannardo, and he says that his name was T-Bone because of course it was.
Naturally. That's his jail yard tough guy nickname. The other cons take you real seriously and you're like, nah, call me T-Bone. It's like, the guy in, Hocus Pocus, like, no, it's ice. Call me ice. That's what it made me think of.
It made me think of the episode of Community where Jeff calls Troy T-Bone. Oh. And he's like, how did you know that was my nickname? And he's like, because you were a football player and your name begins with T. but yeah, basically what I'm learning from this episode at this point is just Jacksonville seems like a real shithole.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just reminds me of, what's his face from The Good Place?
Oh yeah. It's like, I'm Jason Mendoza.
Yeah. It's from Jacksonville.
Yeah. Like, this is all coming together now. I get it.
Yeah.
But like, did they film it in Jacksonville? Why is everyone so sweaty?
So sweaty.
It's like a super hot day or something.
Yeah. But then we go to Tony's house and we're introduced to, as I described her, his extremely sweaty wife.
She's also a blonde girl.
Dripping. Yeah. She looks like she's just been dipped in a vat of oil.
Yes.
Their trailer is just full of empty beer bottles. It looks like it smells terrible.
Yeah, especially in the heat they've implied. Is that happening? Wow.
She says that her husband is trying to get his life together, but that her husband and Joey together are bad news. They realize that the garage owner seems like he's probably a piece of shit, but that he is not guilty.
Yeah.
Probably didn't do anything. So then a little bit later, Tony's wife shows up at the police station and she's all beat up. And she says that he's been drinking again. And Elle's like, no, you're safe with us. You know. Like,
shut up, Al.
Take your hair out of here. And then Reed notices her pearl and diamond ring.
Mm.
It was the one that belonged to Laura Clemenson.
And she takes it pretty well that she's wearing a dead woman's ring.
And he doesn't even just like, he's not just like, can we see that ring?
Right. They're like, I think that's the dead girl's ring.
Yeah. She's just like, ugh.
Yeah. She just takes it off and sets it on the table. Yeah.
She's like, here, you can have it.
I actually don't want it anymore.
Tony arrives at home where Morgan is waiting for him.
And oh, come on, Morgan.
Yeah.
And this is a knockdown, dragout one.
Yeah, they have a pretty good fight. Morgan wins handily.
Yeah.
So Hotch and the rest of the cops show up just as Morgan is cuffing him. Tony has tapes of Tiffany being attacked.
And I didn't get this because the wife says she has no idea about anything that's going on. This tape is literally in the VCR. Like, they just push it in. It was already in there. They're like, look, there's a tape. And they push it in and it plays. How
Maybe
does she not know?
His VCR.
Only he uses the VCR.
Maybe she has a separate VCR.
VCR is only one per person.
Yeah.
That way you can be queued up right on
what
you're watching.
The only way it makes sense.
Yeah.
So they ask where she is. He won't answer. And then we just see her tied up somewhere.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, poor Tiffany. So then the team says that they need to build Tony up since he's the dominant person of the team.
Mm.
Like, why though? Like, if he's, I guess, for them to see. Like, it seems like he should be full of confidence already.
They could see machismo. Even. Could they see who was on? It all comes back to machismo. Could they see which guy was on the tapes?
I can't remember. I think they maybe were like wearing a mask or something. Yeah, their faces were obscured in some way.
Because they say their theory is that the dominant one would do the torturing and the raping and the submissive one would do the taping. I don't buy that.
No, because you would think that the dominant person would be the one wanting to give the instruction.
Right, and make the submissive person do the dirty work. Then you're filming the submissive person doing the dirty work, and should anything get traced back or anything.
Yeah, they're the one that's implicated in it.
But that's not what the BAU says.
No.
They say the opposite of that, and they're the experts, so what do I know?
Doesn't make any sense. Yeah, Hotch goes in and he says that the FBI can't figure this case out and they want to study him. Like, this is the second time you've pulled this trick, because they also did that the first time when they brought in all the empty file boxes with the guy's name on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Didn't work then either.
Yeah. Tony just wants a lawyer?
Yeah. Do you think they're going to actually get him one now that he's explicitly stated he wants a lawyer?
No. No, they're not. They're like, oh, did you say you wanted to talk to your wife?
Yeah.
Because that's who they decide they're going to send in. So, Gideon decides to send in the wife since she's subservient to him and she takes his abuse.
And this strategy is just straight up illegal at this point, right?
Yeah, they're not allowed to talk.
They're not allowed to talk to you again once you ask for a lawyer.
Yeah.
So it's not just morally and ethically questionable, it's illegal.
And, like, wouldn't the conversations that they were having be privileged because they're married? Like, they wouldn't be able to film them and watch them the way they are.
Yeah, it's twofold. They're married. You're right. I didn't even think about
that.
And
he's asked for a lawyer, which they're refusing.
And he's asked for a lawyer. So anything that they get after the point he asked for a lawyer and they don't provide him one is inadmissible in court, right?
Yeah.
This guy's walking.
Yeah. Hotch is not good at his job.
Law and order to know that exactly. This is all going south really quick, people.
Yeah. I have a Law and Order law degree. Yeah.
To go with my Grey's Anatomy doctor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just say doctor degree. Oh my God. I have a degree in doctors.
A doctor degree. Yep.
That's what you get if it's from Grey's Anatomy.
That's what it's called.
Yeah. So they said that Gideon says this is just what they're going to have to do if they want to find Tiffany. There's just no other way.
If he's the dominant one, why would he say a thing to his wife? Why would he listen to anything she says? If he's the dominant, he wouldn't give a shit if she says, please tell them where she is. Because Gideon's like, we're running out of time. Like, why though? Why do you think you're running out of time? The other guy you killed, this guy you have in custody, other than her being cold and hungry, what are we running out of time for?
Yeah, unless they're worried that she has, like, some severe injury or something.
I guess.
I mean, obviously, you want to find her as quickly as possible, but she's
urgent,
not in.
But, I mean, it's just a level of urgency they don't usually have for anything.
Yeah, she's not in immediate danger of being murdered.
Right. I don't know.
I just hate that trope in TV shows because it's like, you don't have to do this.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, it's illegal. Secondly, like, you're traumatizing this woman. Like,
yeah. You just took a dead girl's ring off her finger.
She's
told her husband's
beaten to
been
a bloody pulp,
and
you're like, we should send her in.
Yeah, we need you to do the dirty work for us. We can't get him to crack.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And then I wrote, Reed's glasses that he's never worn before are distracting.
He's just pushing them around on his face a lot.
Yeah. And it was like close up right on his face. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Gideon appeals to the wife and asks her to talk to Tony. She's seems really afraid of him. But Gideon's like, help us, Amber Canardo. You're our only hope. You're like, all right, Obi-Wan, let's go. She goes in to ask about Tiffany. He seems more confused than intimidating.
Uh-huh.
It's a very awkward interaction that they're having. He finally tells her where Tiffany is and says that only Joe's dad has the key to the storage unit. And the team immediately jumps to the conclusion that Joe's dad had started these attacks. And then Tony and Joe continued them for him once he was in his wheelchair and could no longer do this.
Sure.
Like,
based on zero evidence.
Okay.
Yeah.
JJ and Elle are discussing Tony's turbulent childhood, and they wonder where he could have possibly developed the confidence to carry out these attacks. Okay. JJ says maybe that's why he needed a partner. And Elle says that he's supposed to be the dominant one, so he wouldn't need a partner. And you're like, no, he would, because if he is like, if he's that kind of that dominant narcissistic personality, you need someone to make you feel like you're the dominant
right.
person.
Yeah.
You're
you not- need someone to feed off of and give instructions to.
Yeah. Elle.
There's a lot here that isn't adding up for anyone suddenly.
Yeah. Like, yeah, he would just need that to bolster his ego. But all right. But they go to the storage unit. No one's there.
Of course.
Tony was lying.
No one was over there.
Big waste of time. Reed and Gideon discuss Tony's behavior in relation to different people. Gideon watches the tape that he shouldn't have of Amber and Tony and realizes that Tony is actually deferring to Amber. We get to see him do his panicked run out of the room while he's screaming, "Where's the girl? Where's the girl?" I'm like, this is my favorite Mandy move. I love it so much. But apparently Amber told them that she was going to go smoke a cigarette and disappeared.
Slip right through their fingers.
Yes. But then Hotch is like, "You guys, we're running out of time."
Now, seriously, we do have an urgency.
He's like, but yeah, we're like, thanks. Thanks, Hotch.
Yeah.
If you thought we were running out of time before. JJ comes in and says that the DNA on the first two victims doesn't match Joey's, which also means it wouldn't match Henry's, who's the dad. Mm-hmm. So they clearly had nothing to do with this.
Yeah, they just killed poor innocent Joey.
Yeah. So Gideon goes in to interrogate Tony. He tells him that he knows that Joey isn't his partner and that it was Amber all along. he wants to know why he's protecting Amber, and Tony says that nothing will ever come between them. I'm like, ew. So then Garcia calls back because her life is the fucking worst today. She finds out that as a 15-year-old, Amber was hospitalized after being brutally raped and beaten by her abusive father and brother.
Yeah, God.
And that Amber's mother told the victim or told the police that she was lying about it to get.
So gross.
Yeah, to get them out of trouble, which they don't ever bring this up, but is probably why Amber sends the videos to the mothers of the victims.
Yeah.
Like,
it's actually tied in like a neat little bow in a way that I feel like they didn't even intend. Like, they didn't think it
because
that
they don't
far.
Bring it up.
Yeah.
I'm but like, it, why it would fits. You? Yeah. Like, it why would you bring up like the fact that those things are only sent to the mothers and then give us this information or, you know, but
and then never put it together?
Never.
Yeah.
Like, did you not connect the dots?
They did not.
But yeah, they assume that she must derive pleasure from watching the same things that happened to her be inflicted on someone else. And they say that she's the rare case where the victim becomes the abuser.
Like, what?
I didn't think that was all that rare.
I didn't either.
Unless they're talking about very
stereotype they do all the time.
Yeah, like very specific
types. Yes, but I feel like the cycle of abuse people talk about all the time.
Exactly.
Right?
And there's never, I don't think there's been a single like violent unsub that wasn't just like, I mean, there's like the fire setting girl, but that was like a completely different
situation.
That was
situation. An actual delusion. Yeah.
Yeah. But like there hasn't been any of them that they didn't find out had some like abuse or trauma in their childhood.
Yeah. And then they're like, how strange, how rare.
Yeah. Gideon tells Tony that Amber set him up and that she had pulled this whole thing with other men before him. And Tony finally breaks down and tells Gideon that there's a cabin.
Because of course there's a cabin.
Yeah. So they go out and it's like a shed.
Yeah. It's
hard to call that a cabin.
It's generous. Yeah. It's like a lean-to.
Yes. Like an outhouse.
Yeah. There's a great shot, though, of them, like, approaching the cabin, and the sun is, like, coming down through the trees. Like, it's a shot up at their faces as they're all walking through the woods, and the sun's coming through the trees and stuff. I was like, wow, that's a great shot.
It was a really good shot. And then they ruined it with just an alligator. Yeah, popping out of nowhere and hissing.
And then, well, there's this comical shot of Amber smushing this girl's face against the glass.
Yeah, and they're like approaching it, like, and they're like, all right, are you ready? Like, they're going to break the door down, and then she's just like,
like
her like makeup
like
smeared
tongue,
face.
Yeah. right up against the glass. And they're like, it's like, go, oh, go, Jesus. Go. Like, oh, God, guys, come on.
Yeah. So, you know, then they just open the door and pull Amber off of her because she's like 5'2 and weighs like 13 pounds.
Yeah. Soaking wet, which she is. Which all she times.
Absolutely is. but yeah, they drag her out and Morgan like wraps Tiffany up in a blanket and picks her up and carries her out. And then we just get a really long shot of Garcia looking like she's just exhausted.
The shell of
and
a
she's
woman.
Just done.
The light behind her eyes gone.
I know.
As like, would you, mine be after watching that video over and over. But I feel like with all of her sophisticated equipment, why would it take that long to isolate the audio? And why would you have to play the video over and over again in order to do that?
I don't know.
I mean, I know nothing.
I don't,
my laptop is electrical taped together. Yeah. And I have 1 million browser windows open at all time. And I'm like,
I know, it stresses me out to look at your computer.
It is right now. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Oh my God.
11 browser windows open just in Chrome, but I also have Internet Explorer open with other ones. But enough about me. I feel like Garcia would be able, like people today, all these years later, would be able to isolate audio in a video more quickly with like their home equipment than
I know.
Took
I feel
Garcia
like that's something that like my 11-year-old could figure right? out how to do. But I know they said it's something about like because the music's actually playing, it's not added in, which is like even more horrible.
Yeah,
that they like made those girls all, listen to
even
that.
Even more horrible that they ruined Billy Joel for all these women before
yes,
they killed
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Now Tiffany has to live forever, never being able to listen to Only the Good Die Young ever again.
That's what Amber meant when she was like, "She'll never be the same."
She'll never drunkenly sing this Billy Joel song at a bar ever again.
No. You know what she's never going to do is go for another run, I bet.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Yeah. So they are on the plane and JJ announces that they found a body on the grounds of the cabin that they think is Amber's last boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And Morgan is like, well, at least we saved Tiffany.
That's the spirit.
That's the end. Then we get a quote and... it's Aaron Hotchner, and he says, philosopher Khalil Gibran wrote, out of suffering have emerged the strongest souls. The most massive characters are seared with scars.
I guess that's just another pat on the back for Tiffany.
Yeah. Nice.
All I got out of that quote was that I've been pronouncing Gibran incorrectly my whole life.
That's, I can say that one.
Yeah.
It's not French.
And that is the perfect storm.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great episode.
So good.
So I didn't know statistically how to record this unsub. Technically, Amber is the mastermind, right?
Yeah.
But does Amber actually do the killing or do Tony, the other boyfriend, do the killing? Is she only directing them to do like the raping and the torturing and then she kills the girl? They don't really tell us. So should we record one woman, one man as two? We have two unsubs here. Is Amber the only unsub and Tony is also a victim?
I wouldn't say he's a victim.
But then how?
Yeah, maybe one of each.
One of each,
because
think?
It's not like he's not a victim in the way that
Joey is.
Yeah, like what was the last one? The riding the lightning one.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not a victim the way that she was.
Yeah, she was totally unsuspecting.
Yeah, because she didn't have anything to do with it. She didn't know.
He is intimately involved in the crime. That's true.
Yeah, because, I mean, a normal, stable, healthy person would, like, no, I don't want to do that.
You do that.
That sounds bad.
Mm-hmm. So, yes. All right, I'll do one of each.
Yeah.
Our first not a white man of season 2.
Yes.
So we're 80-20 for white men. And then overall in, I mean, how many episodes has this been now
that we've watched? 25?
There have only been 4 not a white man.
Huh.
So overall we are at 85-15.
Nice.
Still pretty good statistics in favor of our hypothesis.
Yeah.
But just a great episode. It's like, yes. Like after, I mean, all of the nonsense of the Fisher King stuff and everything, like, yeah, yeah, it's like gimmicky. It was good, whatever. But they're finally getting back to like why we started watching the show to begin with.
Yeah. And I always, it's the same with any kind of team, like crime show where there's like a team, like once they start, the unsubs start targeting the team.
Yeah.
I lose interest in that. They're not as good.
I'm not there
because it's not
for
believable.
That.
I don't care. Like,
and there's a lot more of that coming in the coming seasons.
Yeah. And I mean, from now on, like every single season, there's like the big bad who's targeting the team. And it's just, it's always so contrived and stupid, but this is just like real bad guys and real
like
people.
A believable crime that kind of keeps you up at night because I don't want that to happen to me.
It is believable because it's like the Carla Homolka and Paul Bernardo case. Like it's a thing that really happened.
Right. Yes. It's terrifying.
And like the families of the victims were really believable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The locale of this horrible crime.
Yes.
Yeah. I liked it a lot. Well, okay, so our profile, as far as, we haven't even given a profile score.
I know, we haven't been able to do this.
Accuracy, helpfulness, and plausibility on a scale of 1 to 10. What would you give this profile?
I don't know. I'm like,
I feel like it didn't
I want to give it a good one because the episode was so good. But
I feel like overall it didn't really help them narrow down their search. Finding the car parts did.
Yeah, once again.
It's the real detective work that does
It's Garcia tracking down information on the internet.
Yeah.
Because that's what led them to Joey, which is what led them to...
To the shop and Tony.
Yeah, to Tony, T-Bone, and then to Amber.
Yeah.
Like, their profile didn't help them look for anybody.
No. And I guess it helped slightly with the interrogation once they got the dominant and submissive roles nailed down properly.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I guess it's like a... I'll generously give it a 6.5.
Yeah.
I guess. Just because I'm so excited there's a profile again.
Yeah. It would be lower if Reed didn't have those glasses.
Seriously. And if he hadn't said the title of the episode in there too. Hotchwatch, there's not really a lot to comment on here besides his bad bedside manner.
Yeah. And, you know, at the end when he's like, guys, we're running out of time.
Yeah.
We have to find her. And like just with the least feeling I've ever heard come out of a person.
Well, that's, I mean... We put him back at a 10, right? He's still at a 10. Because there was all that.
Oh, yeah, because he cleaned the blood off of Elle's walls.
Yeah.
That was a good Hotch move.
So, I guess there's no reason to take any points away from him. He hasn't done enough.
I guess not. There was nothing egregious.
Yeah, just keep him at a 10. I don't know. I mean, I'm excited again. Like, to watch more of the episodes. I feel like it was almost getting to in a little bit of a lull where it was like, all right, I'll watch the next one. But these aren't the kinds of episodes I'm here for.
Yeah.
And the next episode is Psychodrama, which, again, as I say every time, I don't think I remember this one. And then I'll watch the first few opening seconds.
Yeah, the name of it doesn't ring a bell to me at all.
Yeah. Yeah, and the description was very vague on IMDb, and I didn't delve any deeper into that.
Yeah, just excited to see when Elle leaves.
I guess we'll
it can't be that much longer.
That I kind of want to look into. How many episodes does she have left?
I know, I wanted to look it up, but then I was like, I want to be surprised actually.
Yeah, because I'm gonna be so excited when she's gone.
Yeah,
and then I'll be like, oh, man, replacing her already. Well, wherever you listen, be sure to give us a 5-star review. You can find us on Instagram at The Unsub Is a White Man. Our theme music is composed and performed by Nate Youngblood, and the podcast is produced by Nate Youngblood. Thanks, Nate.
And until next time, we will be sweating our asses off in Jacksonville.